91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. We visit next with longtime University of Miami professor of history, Dr. Gregory Bush. He spent decades as a leading advocate for South Florida public spaces, the environment, urban planning, and the humanities. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Bush specializes in modern history with an emphasis on political, intellectual, and cultural themes. He's written a book about Miami's important Virginia Key and is a past president and current board member of the Urban Environment League. He's a co-founder of the Florida Moving Image Archive, authored City Resolutions, Creating a Parked Advisory Board, and the Redesign of Bicentennial Park. We return with Dr. Gregory Bush after NPR and regional news. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, it's today's Topical Currents, Monday edition. Well, this afternoon we visit with longtime University of Miami professor of history, Dr. Gregory Bush. He's made a mark on our region with his activism and leadership in numerous realms, including the Urban Environment League and the history of South Florida public spaces.
He's a founder of the Florida Moving Image Archive and has been an activist for Virginia Key and Bicentennial Park. Dr. Greg Bush has written a book about Virginia Key, Whites, Sand, Black Beach, Civil Rights, Public Space, and Miami's Virginia Key, as well as co-authoring a book with Arva Parks called Miami, the American Crossroads.
He directs the university's Institute for Public History, and there are many more projects of note which we'll touch on in this hour. Welcome to you, Dr. Gregory Bush. I should say welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, you were here for the White Sand Black Beach.
Yeah.
Thanks for having and me. Nature Links.
That's right.
You write, "I need more space for my soul to expand than I have found in Miami." Would you expand on that?
Well, that's
grab
a good
my
open.
Attention.
I guess I found that I was sitting in my house looking out and sitting on my telephone and computer too much and not getting out enough. I mean, I go to meetings and things like that, but I wasn't really engaged with the environment, with enough meeting enough interesting people. I wanted something different. And Maine is where I'm going, as you may well know. And it's gorgeous up there, and it's different. And I just think at my age, at 67, I have the time, I think, and health to start something new and different, which is not saying I wouldn't come back to Miami or giving up on Miami in that sense, but really a new facet, if you will, of my life. And my brother died at age 67 of a brain tumor. So it's like life is short, you know, so why put off some things when you can do it?
It's too strong a word to say you're fed up with Miami?
Yeah, that's too strong. I don't think I'm fed up, although things like, you know, traffic and kind of the speed and spectacle and celebrity glitz of Miami turns me off. It turns a lot of people off. But, no, I found Miami to be a fascinating area, so complex, so filled with so many interesting people and so many good people. That's not a fair statement.
It's not fair.
No.
Let me ask you, have you lost faith in the power of civic activism and public services to transform South Florida specifically?
No, but I do think that there needs to be a lot more coalition building, kind of summits between nonprofit social activists and environmental groups, because I think there are too many kind of isolated groups that are doing good work even.
Well, give us an example. Like, how can that come about? How can there be a coalition? Take South Florida Wildlands. What's the name of it?
No, I'd even
Matthew
go,
Schwartz.
I'd even go a little different.
Okay.
Things like Tropical Audubon, the Urban Environment League, Smash the Slumlords. I mean, there are a lot of different groups that have interests in terms of housing, kind of class-related issues, as well as environmental issues. And they need to communicate better, seems to me. And they need to have some kind of common platforms. Because this is a very scary era that we're living in, as far as I'm concerned, from a national perspective, even a state perspective.
Right.
And then there's all this focus on public-private partnerships that, to me, giving away a lot of public land and public assets. I don't buy a lot of that. I mean, there's a whole Plan Z you may have heard of, about privatizing essentially a lot of Virginia Key, even though it's for biking and everybody's for safer biking. That's not the issue. But there are a lot of games going on, as far as I'm concerned, that are really questionable in terms of not being vigilant enough in looking out for our public spaces and the public interest. And frankly, a lot of people who give money to different organizations, they give it to hospitals and this and that for all sorts of good reasons. But nonprofits that do this kind of work don't get much attention.
In an email to many of your colleagues, you really took issue to what you termed the boosterish media here mm-hmm. that's contributing the problem, and mm-hmm. that it's a fixation on just crime and celebrity news.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's what they do for ratings.
I understand that, yeah.
But it's still a fact that that's really about all we get, or all that the public gets in the media.
Yeah, it's a reinforcing, you know, process where media consultants tell them, well, you have to have pretty faces and, you know, dramatic, flashing
nice
words.
Wardrobe.
And all that baloney to me, you know, and we're not getting many real people up there. And I think it's a subtle turnoff to a lot of the public. And we don't get a lot of the issues that are addressed very clearly. So people don't get a decent context. How should I put it? Take a step back. Trump didn't come out of nowhere, you know, and not just in relation to South Florida, too. You know, it's kind of a national phenomenon. So South Florida isn't that unique. But, you know, this kind of flashy personality and glib, you know, assertions without truth in many instances, that's part of a larger set of problems as far as I'm concerned.
I think it was on All Things Considered yesterday with Michelle Martin. And they were talking about this very thing. And they were saying ratings have never been better.
Mm-hmm.
Since Trump was elected, and mm-hmm. actually since he was campaigning, you know, and that's, I guess, I mean, it was like, you know, such a sad statement.
Arguably, people are getting dumber and dumber. I mean, I hate to say that because I'm not sure it's the people themselves, but, you know, the fact that they're staring at their little iPads or phones all the time, they're getting bits and pieces of information, and yet the context behind issues are not that clear to a lot of people these days, so they're more easily manipulated by phrases and images and pleasing personalities.
Compare the Miami and South Florida 1983 when you first came here with 2017.
Wow.
Besides the tremendous skyline.
Right, the skyline. I mean, I guess to me, when I first came here, I saw opportunity for myself, you know, with the whole... My big push in the beginning was for what was then the Wolfson Media History Center. So I kind of came up with the idea. Then I worked with Arva Parks and others in getting it going. So that was like for me as an historian, I felt there were a lot of interesting opportunities for kind of doing public history. Now, I don't know, it's a different, very different generation. There are different institutions. That's off the ground and running. I don't have much to do with that anymore. So I guess now I guess I'm somewhat more pessimistic about the overall ability to get on top of a lot of issues and public understanding. I just am here in South Florida. I guess obviously the whole thing of crowding and density and traffic – and I would even say rudeness of a lot of people seems to jump out to me. And yet, I love Miami in many ways. I will come back.
You say you love its creative multiculturalism.
I do. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every once in a while when I think, who are my, you know, good friends? And I almost, it's not like I think, are they African American? Are they Hispanic? You know, it's like it becomes part of you. You know, the fact that everybody is just a person at a certain point. And that's wonderful in South Florida and Miami, and I've grown to really appreciate that. Where I'm going, it's almost all waspy characters like me, and I'm very, you know, very conscious and sensitive of that. And, you know, when I was up there, I was going, can I really handle this? Or, you know, what are these people like? But I liked them. You know, and a lot of them had moved. They had moved, lived in different places, including South Florida, and then they'd gone back because they like it up there. And I did not experience significant prejudice or something like that. I mean, I just did not. I pick up on that fairly quickly, and I had a feeling of very down-to-earth people, even though not very multicultural.
So I'd like him to describe Blue Hill, Maine for us.
Well, that was,
okay. Blue Hill, Maine is near Acadia National Park in the mid-coast, so it's like 3 hours north of Portland. So it's a long way from Boston, and it's about an hour from Bangor, the closest airport. So it's a little bit tucked away, but it's on the coast. It's a town of about 2,600 people, and a beautiful little town on the water, and the house that I was able to get at an incredible distressed price is large. I'm going to make an Airbnb out of it, I think, as well as a residence. It's got a pond, and it's just the roadway from the town to my house. It's just the views are extraordinary. E.B. White lived down the road, the writer, and he wrote about Blue Hill and the area, actually the house where I live, because I think I mentioned to you before, Paul Stuckey had transformed it from a hen house, literally. It was 15,000 square foot hen house, and he chopped it in two and then had recording studios and a radio station, community radio station there. I've now taken it over and doing something else. It's somewhat unclear to me exactly what I'm going to do with it. It's a nice challenge.
You said that Maine for you is a place, a unique place of discovery. In what ways?
Well, driving around the state, I look forward to driving around the state. I mean, near my house, there's a wooden boat foundation where there's all sorts of wooden boat making, which I think would be great for NatureLinks students if I started a NatureLinks program up there. There's a lot of organic gardening going on. There's a place called a Haystack, which is an art colony funded by the Rockefeller Foundation or Rockefeller family. So there are a lot of different kind of interesting things like that up there. But as much as anything else, just the views are beautiful. I mean, you can say, okay, wintertime, Greg, it's going to be kind of cold up there. Long, dark days. Do you know that, Greg?
Snowblower.
All those kinds of things. And of course, I do. But I think I mentioned I've been up there twice now in the winter, this winter. And I grew up in the Northeast, so it's not like it's all new to me. And the views every day out over the water are different. And they're gorgeous, as far as I'm concerned. Even dark days and, you know, with different light and stuff like that out there. So it's small town. It's, I think, a lot of pleasant people. I mean, I've spent a number of vacations with good friends like Carmen and Graham and John DeLeon, you may know, and others up there. And poof, it gets magical, and a lot of people really like it, too.
Not everybody thinks the weather is the main, the be-all and end-all to life. We're speaking to Professor Gregory Bush, and about his move from South Florida up to Maine. And we have a lot more to talk about. We have to take a short break, though. We'll be right back.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. We resume our conversation with University of Miami Professor of History, Dr. Gregory Bush. Dr. Bush, you seem to... one of your chief complaints, seemingly, is the waterfront property here in South Florida has largely been disassociated from the public for development. Add to that.
It has. You can barely see it, you know, as you drive along. We were supposed to have a walkway all along the waterfront when I was involved with some of these issues with Bicentennial Park in the early days from the late 90s. It ain't there now, you know. I mean, so it's like, why does it have to take so long? And then it gets worse and worse out in Virginia Key. I'm not a proponent at all of the boat show taking over a big part of Virginia Key. That was not in the master plan of 2010 that the commission voted unanimously for. And it's getting bigger and bigger. And frankly, the city administration, you know, sometimes pulls some fairly fast things, as far as I'm concerned, to be able to get their way. So, but it's always important.
Of course, they're streaming revenue from these things.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. No, I understand. And their jobs, presumably. So there are a lot of the same thing with gambling, you can argue. But it really comes down to a set of values of what we need. We need a more vibrant economy, for sure. But we also need to preserve the parts of the natural world that they're just going away.
Without the river and the bay, this place would never have taken off.
Absolutely correct, yeah. And you know, even Virginia Key, there's now a push to build up the toxic waste dump in the middle of the island, you may know.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm kind of concerned about what's going to happen there. And even Virginia Key Park Trust, that I've been a strong supporter of for many years, they're talking about seemingly big privatized building for weddings and this and that, even though they have $14 million, $15 million of county bond money. So I'm concerned, continue to be concerned about the commercialization of the waterfront without a strong and vibrant enough public that has enough information about these complex issues, because they're very complex.
Well, your work on about Virginia Key has been so important. Are you handing the mantle to somebody else? I mean, is somebody going to be continuing your work? Are you going to be continuing any of it from afar?
I'll certainly keep my eye on it and have opinions.
There's a trust there.
There is. Well, yeah. There's a Virginia Key, historic Virginia Key Beach Park Trust for the 80 acres. But then a lot of us worked, actually, and I have to give him a lot of credit, with Commissioner Francis Suarez. And he's the one that helped us. We all worked together to write the legislation for the Virginia Key Advisory Board over the entire island. And I was chair of it.
He's a Miami City Commissioner.
Miami City Commissioner. And so I resigned from that, because I won't be living here for the foreseeable future. And so they elected the other day, I went to the meeting, Joe Raskow of Key Biscayne as the new chair, and Gary Milano, who chaired that meeting, as the vice chair. And the meeting was, from my perspective, was very productive and positive, because they're voices of people that are speaking out about the natural environment. In fact, we need, a natural shoreline rather than all the concrete that they want to build, and a number of other issues. So I just hope that the public can stay involved, be involved with the Urban Environment League and other organizations that can stand up and do the research. And a lot of it's communicating with each other. So you get some people out at these meetings with enough information and points of view.
Well, let's talk about the Nature Links for Lifelong Learning, which is very dear to your heart. You say you're very passionate about that. First of all, why?
Okay. Because young adults with intellectual disabilities, for the most part, over 18 in particular, certainly over 22, I'll use this word advisedly in quotes, are kind of dumped from the system. They're out of public school system. They have little to do. I experienced that with my own daughter. And they need to be stimulated. They also need jobs. They need independent life skills.
Similar to kids in the welfare system, in the child welfare system, being kind of dumped out once they're of age.
Yeah, I suppose you could say that. But it's as much as anything else, and almost all the money goes into job training, okay? Very narrowly focused job training above age 22, through vocational rehabilitation, through state funding. I think this population, I'm convinced of it, this population has years to catch up on in terms of social skills. A number of them don't speak very clearly. They don't intercommunicate very well and things like that.
What about emotionally?
Emotionally, they have challenges, let's put it that way. So they need more attention. And it's a civil rights issue to me, and I know a lot of the parents and other people, supporters of NatureLinks, that they need to be engaged in some art projects, videography, travel training, a whole bunch of things. Whereas the state only, by and large, wants to put money into job training. And I just think that's really narrowly focused.
Tell us quickly how it works, the NatureLinks program.
Well, we have right now two programs, one called the Urban Explorers, based at the Frost Science Museum, and the other is Culinary Foundations at the Coral Gables Congregational Church. So students go Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 3, and we were always looking for students. We give scholarships. We, of course, would like students, to pay, because we got to pay teachers. Although we've gotten some money through Miami-Dade Public Schools, because they got a state grant that I gather may be running out, which is really pretty tragic. And then I have to give credit to the city of Miami that pays for a Parks Department aide to work with our students. And they've just, actually, again, thanks to Francis Suarez, who seems to be particularly sensitive to this population, he is arranging for us to get an office, because the whole operation's been out of my house, and the house is going away.
Yeah, so what's going to happen there when you leave?
It appears we're going to get an office at the Manuel Artime Center on Calle Ocho, and that'd be great, so that we'll have a staff person there, not every day, but as a base. And then we'll hopefully be expanding programs. I'd love to get one going at the Hampton House, for example, a culinary program for underserved young adults. And the Hampton House, as far as I'm concerned, needs more public attention. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Tell us about it. Yeah, tell us about the Hampton House.
It was a very famous motel hotel back in the 1950s, in particular in the 60s, for African Americans. Martin Luther King made his I Have a Dream, an early version of his I Have a Dream speech there, had a swimming pool, a lot of stars went there. I mean, it's just a happening place connected to Virginia Key as well. But it basically went to seed, until about 15 years ago, I think it was, or under Alex Pinellas when he was mayor. A number of people, including Enid Pinckney, most significantly, you probably know, she was on the program with us, and Kathy Hirsch and a number of others, have really worked hard to try to get it going. I know Commissioner Audrey Edmondson had county money go into reviving it, but it's, how should I put it, very, with all respect, it's sitting there. It needs more activity. I tried to have the potential of I'm giving away thousands of books now to the Miami-Dade Public Library, but I was hoping maybe it could be a library branch there, and then to have a NatureLinks culinary class there, because it's a huge event space. And it's relatively secure. They've got a parking lot in the back, and it's
just sitting there, not being used.
Yeah, it can be an art.
I think it's
music.
Rentable for private use.
Yes, I think that's right. But there could be a great cultural center there, and so that's one hope that I have, that there can be kind of a linkage, even with Virginia Key in that.
If you'd like to speak to Dr. Gregory Bush, you can give us a call, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, or you can email radio@WLRN.org, and I want to say we have an emailer, Gary, who says, I think I was in what was your first class at UM in the fall of 1983, History of the U.S. to 1877, and another course later that was co-taught with Dr. Paul George about the history of Miami. I was a first semester freshman, and this was my one non-science, non-math course. I was really thrilled to get an A on my first college paper, but I remember being incensed when Dr. Bush wrote, though your last sentence is a bit flowery for my taste. The college professors I remember most are remembered less for the subject matter they taught than the fact that they taught me how to think and form my own opinions about the world around me and articulate those opinions to others. Dr. Bush and a handful of others fit that bill, and I wanted to say thanks and good luck in your new venture.
That's nice.
Were you a tough professor in classes?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I gave a lot of reading. And a lot of students don't want to read as much anymore, you know. So, and then I would get kind of impatient, you know, with the kind of lack of attention they gave. But I understand they have a lot of other courses, and mine's not the only one. So I think I graded fairly tough earlier. Actually, I think I've been easier more recently.
Do you see the joy of reading being eroded by our digital?
Yes, I do. And I notice it myself. One of the things that I look forward to, for example, in Maine is sitting down and reading a novel. I don't think I've read a novel in a while. You know, I just don't have the time. I'm always checking this. So many of us are, these machines, and looking on my tablet or two computers.
It's funny to sit in waiting rooms and just see how almost everyone is twiddling around.
Yeah, no, there's something.
More than almost everyone.
Yeah, well, that's right. And it's dangerous. I honestly think, I mean, you get more information, you get it quickly and all the rest, but I guess I think the context of issues and really the deeper understanding of what it is that we're doing, you know, is slipping away.
Do you think you've been an inspiration to others here in South Florida?
I don't like to say that.
Well, I know. Well, let me ask you this.
How about
then.
A mentor?
What do you think is your great... What effort of yours has borne the most fruit in your estimation?
Maybe helping to build a coalition with the Urban Environment League and NatureLinks in different issues, kind of waterfront issues and then special needs issues, and maybe some notion of public history. But I frankly, because the Institute of Public History at the University of Miami was never really funded. It was kind of all related to my time. Never went further. I wished it had gone further.
That was mostly oral history?
Yeah, a lot of oral history in particular. But Arva Parks and I did that Miami documentary reader. And we got 25,000 copies to be donated by Prentice Hall to be an adjunct in American history classes, you know, for Miami-Dade Public School System. It was basically never used because of FCAT.
The history's not taught as a...
Local history or state history is really minimized because they're all teaching to FCAT with American history standards, and I think that's a shame, you know?
We're speaking with Dr. Gregory Bush. Professor Bush is an author and was professor of history, still is, I guess, at the University of Miami, director of the Institute for Public History, and longtime Miami activist, champion of public service. We're going to take a short call break. We're going to come back and take more of your calls. Again, our number, 1-800-743-9576.
And we're back on this Monday afternoon. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. And we're visiting with Dr. Gregory Bush at the University of Miami. He's been a longtime history professor there, an author and public servant, public advocate. Again, if you'd like to join in, you're certainly welcome. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Greg Bush, touch on the eternal battle, at least since I've been here since 1973, of trying to defend the western boundaries of both Broward and Miami-Dade County. And was the Eastern Ho movement, has that been a failure? Because it seems they're just keeping that boundary keeps moving west.
I'm not sure. I think it had a number of results, you know, in terms of densification along mass transit routes and things like that.
No, well, they're trying to revitalize the inner the eastern part of
that's
the county.
Right. Yes. Right. And yet, I guess as you were alluding privately before, the whole thing with Mall of the Americas is pushing outward. And I just don't think at the state level there's the will, maybe even the county as much, although I don't know. I have some reason for hope that if we want to survive as a state and as a region, we have to be really conscious of these environmental issues in terms of water. And that's a big part of it. And most people, it's a very complex hydrological system. Most people don't know anything about
that. The mall is 6 million square feet plus parking.
I think it's crazy. I really do. I think
70,000 cars a day.
Yeah, just nuts as far as I'm concerned. It'll make all sorts of problems worse. And but who stands up against it, you know, it's not that clear. And there are not that many. I mean, this is my big point, too. There are not very many powerful, if you will, public interest groups. Urban Environment League is, you know, a nice group. I support it. I'm one of the members. But it's not that powerful these days. And
so when you were talking about them coalescing, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, but aren't they each struggling for their own dollars?
Oh, yeah, for
so,
sure.
I mean, maybe that's one of the reasons that they stay separate is because each of them is vying for support. But maybe you have a good point that if they did form a coalition.
I think that's the only way to go, you know, and to get some of these common issues talked about, you know, among groups and just stop being so selfish in terms of kind of fragmenting, proliferating,
right.
And then everybody needs a staff person and da-da-da-da-da. Just at a certain point, I think it's not working.
Let's take a call or two. First up, we've got Camilla. Camilla in Miami. Hi there.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Camilla.
I've never heard about Dr. Bush before, and I'm very happy to hear about all of his ideas and his work. And I'm a professional chef. I originally from Brazil, and I decided to start a new career here in Miami, and I went to Johnson & Wales and took a bachelor's in culinary arts, and I'd love to help him with these programs and teaching these adults a new career, and it would be great to talk about it.
So you want info on how about Nature Links?
No, he said about teaching young adults culinary arts.
That's right. That's part of Nature Links, and you can take a look at our website, which is www.naturelinks.net. That's probably the best way.
That's where
I'll get my information.
Yes, that's where it's all through. That's naturelinks.net.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for your
Thank
interest.
You.
Okay, we'll move
Thank
along to Jody in Miami. Hi, Jody.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. And thank you so much to your guests for breaking the seal. I've lived here 6 years, and I found that it's really impossible to talk to the people that run the city, the insiders, about the warts of the city. I've lived all over the U.S. I've lived all over lots of cities in the world. And this is definitely the least coordinated, least open to suggestions of change city that I've lived in ever. And so I want to thank the doctor. I mean, and it makes me think, like the doc, like your guest, that maybe I need to move to Maine or at least move somewhere to get a different experience in life, one that's much more positive than I'm finding here.
Mm. Well, the alternative would be, you know, to get involved with a group to try to, you know, make the change happen here.
Well, I definitely do. And one of the things I would say to you is that you had the ecosystem of UM. I've moved here 6 years ago, and it's very difficult to break in through the cliques.
That's very true.
I am involved, and I feel like I do try to coalesce the community in lots of ways, and it's really part of my skill set. But really, there are a lot of forces, it feels like, that are kind of working against that kind of coalesce.
Well, I tend to agree that there's a lot of kind of insiders from some very big foundations and others that tend to fund very few groups and certain sets of ideas. And I don't know, I just wish there was more openness from big power sources in Miami, from wealthy donors to foundations to even academic institutions. And others.
Yeah, so thank you. I agree, and I'm hoping that I can catapult this conversation again to open up some of those opportunities and for change, which I think would make the city fantastic. It's on the verge. It just needs to shift a little. Thanks so much.
Okay,
thanks for your call. Greg, in other communities, do we have the preponderance of commercial interests seemingly always to beating the public good?
Think about New York, for one example, or maybe even Boston. I think you have a more solidified public spaces. You know, they're not going to be commercializing Central Park that much. I mean, you know, it's just not happening. There's more of a tradition there. Whereas we somehow look at public spaces as changeable. You know, literally in 1948, I think it was, there was a very serious proposal to get rid of Bayfront Park, which had been created in the mid-20s, as you know, and put a parking lot there because there were parking problems at that point, and then have a new park out in the water. You know, that's kind of like Miami, you know. The same thing with, I mean, one of the things that outraged me in the last few years, as much as anything, is this MDM Tequesta building that was put up where the old Royal Palm Hotel was and the Tequesta ruins, and I remain angry at the lack of attention to our historic sites, just it was all money, you know, and then all the insider interests. And I was even a part of that process, and I just came away appalled, although very cleverly done by, former Commissioner Sarnoff.
Why did you never run for public office?
I held an office once appointed by to the community council in Kendall. So I saw that for about a year or so.
I bet they had fun with you.
Well, I pushed public space, but they're powerless by and large. And it was too frustrating. And kind of frankly, spending so much time on little zoning issues was tedious to me. Mm. And then I guess I came to see that, and actually I had either conversations with Katie Sorensen and others over the years about this. You know, it's always people saying, well, run for a public office and do something. I think sometimes you can do a lot more from outside. You know, you don't have the actual power,
But you don't have to please so many masters.
Yeah, you don't have to get campaign money, which I think is the bane of our existence also. And then you're not subject to the Sunshine Law and all these kinds of things. So I honestly came to see that I'd rather be on the outside talking and pushing and coercing to some degree.
Next caller, Edward, Miami Beach. Hello, Edward. Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. I was really curious about NatureLinks. My son is intellectually disabled, but he's older. Although, he's rather high functioning, and I'm an artist, and he's worked with me in new media installations. But besides his maturity level being much younger than he is, physically, it even looks about 10 years younger than he is. He's 38 right now, and I'm just wondering, what's the cutoff, and is there something beyond NatureLink's program that would be something that he could be involved in?
Well, formally, it's like early 30s, but we try to keep it somewhat open. We have had some older students, so you might check it out and actually with our outreach coordinator, Jenna Balfe, 305-965-0817 is her number. But there's also Parent to Parent is one organization that provides a lot of information about different programs. There are other programs around, but I would try Parent to Parent, I think, to keep it simple at this point.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Sure.
If you'd like to join in, our telephone number, 1-800-743-9576, or email radio@wlrn.org.
Okay, and we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will take more of your calls and your emails. Speaking with Professor Gregory Bush, history professor, and we'll be right back.
Troublemaker.
We'll be right back.
And we return as today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Dr. Gregory Bush. Again, if you'd like to join in, we have a few minutes left and a few lines open, 1-800-743-9576. Also, email, maybe quicker, radio@wlrn.org. Please keep those emails short. Next caller, we have Michael in Delray Beach. Michael, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm a big fan of yours, Mr. Cooper and Bonnie Berman, and I sure miss the Today in History.
Oh, the history quiz?
No, well, that too, but, today, whatever happened in history, used to do that for years.
Oh, yeah.
I just kind of got old,
Michael.
Oh, that's too bad.
It was fun to do but while it lasted, but...
Yeah. I wanted to just make a quick comment. I've been listening to Professor Bush in the beginning of the program, and I think I got the message that he's discouraged with how South Florida now expanded a little bit besides Dade County, Broward County, and Palm Beach have just gone crazy. I grew up here going back to 1960 where you could ride a Vespa down the road and not get killed. I heard him say rudeness. I heard him say traffic. I've heard him say diversity has changed the area, and it's so right. It's just not what it used to be. So I understand the discouragement and wish you well in your endeavors up in Maine, I believe you said you're headed to, and it is a changed community.
Let me be clear, though, that the positive one of the positive things about South Florida is the diversity, as far as I'm concerned. That wasn't one of the negatives. I need to stress that. I mean, the people from all different cultures, I think, is brilliant in certain respects. It does bring problems upon occasion and division over different assets.
But it's not boring.
No, it's not boring. And I think it's important for us to all appreciate that.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with, diversity. Has its, positive and negatives, like a double-edged sword. But, a lot of people come here from different areas of the country or other countries, and they bring their own ideas and how they would like to see things run as they were used to where they came from.
Probably.
And that creates problems because it's a whole hodgepodge of different ideas, and you get a checkerboard square. So diversity... Is a double-edged sword, but not a bad thing, but too much of a good thing is not good either. That's my thought.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thanks for calling.
You have an email?
Thank you.
We do. Carmen writes, I attended Dr. Bush's first class at U of M, first row in a small auditorium.
And we have two first-timers here.
Of the LC Center. He was the most refreshing professor ever, constantly challenging me to see things differently and to experience history firsthand. I remember visiting buildings funded by the WPA and learning how government can impact people positively. I also remember when I received my first paper graded by him. All I can say is that his comments, all in red ink, prompted me to request my first office visit with a teacher ever. We became family and we'll miss you. Carmen, you. I don't know if you know who that is.
I know Carmen very well.
Okay.
Carmen's
right.
A very good friend with her husband, Graham, since that class, as a matter of fact.
Sounds like you were a tough teacher. But they appreciated you.
I hope some.
I think real students want to be challenged, as long as in a good way.
I would hope, yeah.
And Anik writes, Professor Bush is one of the few people who gave me an appreciation for living in Miami beyond all its disappointments. Mm. I'm thankful I had the opportunity to take a history class, the last class before graduation. My best to you and your daughter on your way to Maine.
That's nice. Thank you, Anik.
I think they may change his mind.
I think.
Well, as I think I mentioned, I'm going to try to come back to teach in the spring next year. So it's not a complete farewell. It's a partial farewell. But,
well, I guess it's a so long, it's not goodbye.
Yeah, something like
How's
that.
How's that?
Yeah.
And we move along to Lee in South Miami. Lee, hi.
Hi. I worked with Greg when he was starting NatureLinx, and I wanted to remind him of what a great idea it was, the intention, and how it worked so well. We were trying to bring out the more creative side of these students that wasn't able to express because they didn't have the tools. So we took them around on the metro rail, took them to parks, introduced them to people, and got them to interview people and speak to people around town, and did art projects with them, and just showed them the beauty of the place through the parks and the beaches and the people and the buildings, and got them to open up. And after that, we started the cooking. Well, cooking is another creative endeavor that really sparked their creative interests. And that's where that's the reality of human beings, to spark your creativity. And that's what we worked on. And I wanted to know that he should be proud of that.
Oh, thanks, Lee. Lee's worked hard with us all for a number of years. Thanks. I'm going to miss so many people like Anik and friends that have called in. That's really nice.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lee, for calling.
You're welcome.
What would you say to others to inspire them, if you would like, to be more civically engaged?
We live here. You know, we live here. We wanted a better place. It takes effort. I mean, that's maybe one of the big things, too. It's not easy, and it's not a one-day affair. One of the key things I learned, if you want to make any difference, you got to show up at meetings. You got to do the research. You got to work with other people. You got to get along and not just spout out. But you got to use persistence and perseverance, if you will, to get at things. Because a lot of people, especially, I hate to say this, and it'll spark probably controversy, younger people almost want to be able something to happen quickly, even a march, which is fine. I'm not against marches, against sea level rise, et cetera. But it's got to be longer term perseverance in terms of a program, multiple events, so that you really change people's consciousness. And it's never one event, my view.
I was wondering about that. I thought perhaps your appearance today might inspire some young people mm-hmm. who would like to become more active civically, and the best road to take to do that.
Well, one would be, I mean, we just had to, actually they had a, Grace Solara, the president of the Urban Environment League, had a party for me the other night. And one of the key themes was to try to get younger people involved with the Urban Environment League. UEL.org. So that's one route. We need more younger people, but it's not just the Urban Environment League. There are other groups like the Sierra Club and Tropical Audubon that are both environmental, or Smash the Slumlords, and others that are more edgy, or they're edgy in different ways, and that's fine, but we all should be working more collaboratively.
When we had you on last, it was for White Sand, Black Beach, Civil Rights, Public Space in Miami's Virginia Key.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you just win an award for that book?
Yes, yeah, several, actually. I'm actually proud of them. One is the Silver Award from the Florida Writers Then I went up to Tallahassee, and they gave me an award and a little talk. Then I got the Harry and Harriet Moore Award from the Florida Historical Society. And if you know anything about Harry Moore, he and his wife, actually both of them, were blown up in 1951, right, civil rights activists. So that was really nice to get that. And then Tropical Audubon gave me an award last Sunday, the Polly Redford Conservation Award. So it was nice to get, you know, an award for kind of history. And
Polly Redford, related to Jim Redford?
Yes, wife. She's an historian, dead a number of years now, but really a significant local historian as well. So getting some recognition from both environmental conservation and historical and civil rights stuff is nice.
I'm a little reluctant to ask this, but I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
You just taught a course called Beyond Trump, Mass Media and the Modern Presidency. We have about a minute left.
Is that lucky for me?
I
tried to be neutral, and I went back to 1896, William Jennings Bryan, and spent a lot of time on the media.
Big South Florida figure, too.
That's right. That's right. And brought that to their attention, et cetera. Clearly, by the end of the course, you know, I'm really kind of disheartened by the shape of modern media in general. So it became depressing teaching the course even before Trump won, because I think a lot of the elements have been in the air for a while. Celebrity, just lack of good news coverage and all the rest. So, I mean, Trump is, to me, how should I put it, a terrible president. I think he's an embarrassment to our country before the world these days. I didn't tell students that through most of the course, right at the end, actually, I did, because I wanted to be honest about what I felt after the election. And I fear for the Republic, to be honest, given these circumstances. But that's not why I'm moving to Maine.
No.
But, you know, the whole climate, I think political climate is very, we need new leaders that can come to the fore, that can really excite people. I mean, Hillary, as much as I admired her, you know, came across as kind of dead as a personality. And, you know, you don't always just want to play personality games, and yet you got to balance both. Right. You got to be an interesting personality.
I'd like to see a park named the Gregory Bush Public Park.
That's nice.
There we go.
We'll start the groundswell here.
Just like with Marvin Dunn wanting to get some kind of a tribute to McDuffie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talking about
mm-hmm. Well, we wish you the best.
Thank you.
Professor Gregory Bush, PhD, author, associate professor of history at University of Miami. Still going to teach a couple of classes there.
In the spring.
In the spring. And can I give out, is that for?
Sure.
His email is publicbush@gmail.com. Also, naturelinks.net. And
UEL.org.
UEL.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
And thanks for tuning in. Our lead producer is Richard Ives. Technical support from Michael Stock. Polly Landis is associate producer. Jason Zabka is our online producer. It's easy to download free audio archives of each program at our website, WLRN.org, and more information and links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program highlights National Teachers Day with interviews of the Teachers of the Year from Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade counties. What makes these outstanding teachers so effective and inspirational? Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.